Brother Mazur, as I have suggested, served as principal of the academy from 1806 to about 1892. During the latter part of his service as principal of the academy, he was also superintendent of church schools for the entire church. His burdens became so heavy that in 1892 he was released as principal of the academy and continued as superintendent of church schools until 1901, when he passed to his reward. I was reading some past history just recently and noted that in 1904, 3 years after his death, a meeting was held to commemorate his life on this campus. And at that meeting, a young man by the name of Bryant S. Hinckley presided. We have this same young man, and he's still young with us today. He may tell us something about the meeting held in 1904 or anything else that he desires. President Bryant S. Hinckley.
President Wilkinson, Sister Crandall, members of the faculty, and the students from everywhere. I'm greatly honored with the invitation to be here this morning. It's great to meet your president. He stimulates you. His ability is manifest in the history of this institution. It's very delightful to mingle with the distinguished men and women who make up your faculty. But I'm saying to you that it is really great to look into the faces of the men of tomorrow. They're here. I do not know your names, where you came from, but I know who you are. You are the young men of earnest purpose, willing to work and acquainted with struggle. And after all, struggle is the mystic key that unlocks the storehouse of knowledge and plants a boy's feet firmly in the path of progress and achievement. You belong to a great institution. I am invited here to say a few things about Brother Mazur. May I say to you that 55 years ago, I taught the Old Testament in one of the sections in this institution. Some stories survive. I'm giving you one. A man was endeavoring to get a donkey through a small gate. He couldn't drag him through or persuade him or pummel him or do anything else to get him to go through. He struggled with him for more than an hour and finally got him through. And then one of his neighbors came along and said, "It takes a great deal of patience to manage these animals." "Yes," this man said, wiping the perspiration from his face, "I've often wondered how Noah had the patience to get two of the damn things in the ark." Brother Mazur had a rare sense of humor. This story has gone the rounds, I know. As you remember, he was a member of the General Superintendency of the Sunday Schools and traveled over the church with Brother George Goddard. Brother Mazur was in delicate health, and the good woman where they were staying persuaded him to take a cup of tea. And that morning, when Brother Goddard was speaking, he asked all who had observed the word of wisdom that morning to stand up and be counted. They stood up, and Brother Mazur remained seated. And Brother Goddard said to him, "Brother Mazur, get up." "Oh," he said, "I can count them all right sitting down." While he was laboring in London as a missionary, he contacted a wealthy and cultured gentleman who invited Brother Mazur to bring some of the elders and dine with him at the hotel. Brother Mazur was very particular about his table habits. The elders were not so particular. He was shocked. And after he got away, he said, "I will suffer poverty, I will go through persecutions, and I will go to hell with the missionaries, but I will not go to dinner with them." There is something, there's a glint of humor in this. You remember that when he lived up on the avenues in Salt Lake City, he bought him a cow at the suggestion of some of his neighbors. They were, may I use the word, they were tickled pink over having the cow. And they were invited to go to Brother Schoenfeld's for dinner. And Brother Schoenfeld lived about 3 miles across the city. And they were walking over. And they didn't know what to do with the cow. So they concluded to lead her over. So they led the cow over to dinner and brought her back. How typical. This incident is a fine interpretation of his attitude. This was while he was doing missionary work in London. And some of the elders asked him to carry perhaps some of their bedding or their carpet bags down to the station. He said it was an offense to any cultured man in Germany to be seen on the street with any kind of a package. And his wife was greatly disturbed over it. He walked the floor, and finally he said, "They hold the priesthood, and they told me to do it, and I'll do it." One other. This is rather recent in his history. One of the brethren was driving him from Oasis over to Fillmore, over that flat country, in the days of the horse and buggy. They were riding in a white top, and the team was made up of a pacer and a flat trotter. When one of the horses was on the ground, the other was up. Brother Mazur stood it as long as he could. Then he said to the driver, he said, "I'll either have to get out or get in the back seat unless these horses keep better time." But I haven't come here altogether to tell stories, and I think if I keep within the limit, I must try to read a little something of what I would like to say here. I must say while I'm resting that all the years that I've been coming to this institution, I have never heard such beautiful singing as I've listened to here this morning. Brother Budge has referred to this. Dr. Mazur was a product of the missionary system of the church and a contributor to it. 100 years ago, he was baptized. That was a significant event in the history of the church. The contribution which he has made to it can never be estimated. He was a brilliant and devoted missionary and did a great work in that field. In 1870, he returned from his mission. He was then 42 years of age. For 5 years, he taught in Salt Lake City. He was then 47 years of age. seasoned in experience, contrite in heart, settled in his faith, and ready for his great work. He had come up through much tribulation. He knew the pangs of hunger, the pressure of want, the meaning of hardship, sorrow, and disappointment. Now he was more than a German convert. Wherever he went, whatever he did, he was recognized as a superior man of great professional ability. But he never found himself till he came to Provo. It was here he did the major work of his life, the work which he was meant to do, which he was sent to do. His educational preparation, his missionary experiences, his rare and marvelous gift of teaching, his great intellectual endowments, all came to full fruition here. It was here that this son of destiny began his great work. What did he do? Two things. First, he proved himself a master craftsman in the fine art of teaching, demonstrated his ability to kindle in the hearts of others a love for the truth, the power to awaken and call forth the good that slumbers in the human heart. There was about him an innate goodness of character that registered in one's soul. Across the years come these words: there is a Mount Sinai for every child of God if he only knows how to climb it. We are the sons of God, and yet it doth not appear what we may become. This high note ran through all his teachings. This lofty idealism characterized his life. A long line of brilliant men and women were touched by the contagion of his great soul and went forth from this institution to splendid achievement. It would be interesting to read that roll of honor if we had the time. His second, and no doubt his greatest contribution, was the molding and shaping of the soul of this institution, and the direction which he gave to the entire church school system. Under the inspired leadership of Brigham Young, he became the father of a system of education built upon the great idea that God lives and reveals his will to his children, that revelation is a modern reality, that there need be no speculation about the eternal existence of God or the mission of the Redeemer of the world. The church itself rests firmly upon that foundation. It offers no compromise to those who scoff at visions and revelations or the possibility of messengers sent from the presence of God. The major responsibility of this institution is to plant in the hearts of the youth of this church that testimony. And when they do it, it makes a contribution to a man's life that nothing else can do. All through the years, this institution has been a conservator of that faith. It has given to the church through its students a service distinguished for its leadership and loyalty. It has a great heritage coming down from the very beginning. If it preserves and cherishes that heritage, this institution will grow and prosper, rise and shine among the great institutions of the earth. Dr. Mazur has been dead for 54 years. The generation of men and women who knew him best is gone. His voice is forever stilled. But the words which he spoke and the truths which he taught will never die. I repeat, there was a purity and a transparent goodness about this man that won one's affection and gave weight and form to all that he said and did. Against the background of half a century, he stands majestically among the intellectual nobility of his time and shines among the spiritual leaders of his day. Let us hope that someday, on these grounds, hallowed by his influence, his form will speak in bronze to coming generations. God bless his memory forever. Amen.